Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Duncan Cheek and Kyle Jarrow's new musical, Noir, is the final Martell musical of the New York Stage and Film and Vassar College Powerhouse Theater season. Cheek and Jarrow previously worked together on the musical Whisper House. Noir tells the tale of a heartbroken man in L.A. who discovers and involves himself in a mystery unfolding just beyond his paper-thin walls. Duncan Cheek joins us now to talk about Noir at Powerhouse, the Deaf West Theater production of Spring Awakening, his Tony Award-winning show penned with Steven Sater, coming to Broadway in the fall, and about his musical version of American Psycho, with book by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, which comes to Broadway in early 2016. Duncan Cheek, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. What aspects of noir are based on radio plays and film noir?
Kyle Jarrow, my writing partner, had this idea to just work on a piece of musical theater that used some of the tropes and the aesthetics of film noir generally. And we had talked about it for a couple of years before we both had a minute to kind of dive into it. We had the opportunity to start writing up at the Rhinebeck Writers Retreat, which is a new program up there. And, you know, we jumped into this thing without very specific references. It was kind of like, oh, it just needs to have a film noir vibe about it. While it was a really great starting off point, as we continued to develop the piece, instead of being like notionally 50s or 60s, it became contemporary. And then a lot of those, the kind of film noir, the kind of attitudes kind of dropped away from the characters and dropped away from their dialogue. And so so it's kind of like the film noir is like a spirit that inhabits the thing, but a lot of the specific tropes have kind of disappeared, and it's become a little bit more just purely contemporary.
So is there still stylistically in the production, or as the production goes ahead, do you anticipate that there will be stylistic homages to noir or
yes.
No?
Yeah, there are in the sense that, you know, we have a Foley artist stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the way that film noir films, you have this kind of very ridiculously overblown sound effects,
right,
of like footsteps and gunshots.
Door creaks.
Yeah, all those things are really like over the top. So we definitely have that on stage, which is a lot of fun. And we, you know, hope to continue to develop it until it turns into like a Gallagher routine practically. And then I think within the music, again, most of it's contemporary, but there are definitely these nods to torch songs and genre songs of 50s and 60s that might have been, you know, at home in a film noir film. Yeah, we're definitely just playing with the form and playing with the stylistic, you know, aspects of noir.
Does the Foley participate in the music at all?
This is sort of what we're exploring here at New York Stage and Film, is, you know, where you'll have a radiator creaking and a kind of like furniture moving in another room and footsteps, and those things kind of accrue to become like a rhythmic bed, and then that rhythmic bed kind of becomes a song. So like, you know, if you know Pink Floyd's song Money, mm-hmm. where there's all those sound effects that kind of turn into the song.
Right.
It's really just using the same kind of trick. And it's, yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, the Foley artist brought a ton of like really fabulous, cute little objects. So it's just cool to see it happen live on stage as the story is being told.
So I promise the whole interview won't be about Foley, but one more question, about it.
Yeah.
Where do you find a Foley artist? How do you land one and entice them to come work on your musical with you?
You know, they're very elusive, and they're very in demand. It's really, I think it's a job that a lot of young people should start looking into. But we had one when we did a workshop at Playwrights Horizons in New York, and he was unavailable. He was busy doing another project, and so we found Jeremy, and I actually just met him, but he came with such a great complement of objects that I am instantly a fan of his.
Great. Tell us a bit about the story of the show. What is the actual plot that noir tells?
Well, I can't give it away.
Well, of course not.
It's
so the setup
really,
then.
Yeah, the setup is that a one-hit wonder musician who's holed himself up in this apartment in L.A., and he's kind of trying to write a new song, but in fact he's kind of mourning the loss of a lover that, you know, that has gone away. And in the midst of all of this, there's a murder. He is possibly a suspect in this murder, but, you know, it's kind of unclear who's committed the murder and what's really going on. And so sort of the fun of the piece is the unraveling of what actually did happen. And, you know, there's some flashbacks to him and his lover. And then there's the kind of story that he's telling the audience about what happened. And you could say he's sort of an unreliable narrator. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun, too. Actually, I should say it's played by the awesome Kevin Mambo, who is just in Fortress of Solitude at the Public. Mm-hmm. And he was in Fela. And Kevin is, I told him he can sing any of my songs whenever he wants, because he's like such a sick, great singer. And so, yeah, so it's a genre piece that has some points of connection with things like The Lives of Others, the German film about that was about kind of surveillance in East Germany, because he's sitting in this apartment and he's just like listening to the people in his building with these paper thin walls, and he can hear everything that's going on. So it has points of connection with that. Also, the plot has a little bit of a Usual Suspects kind of aspect to it. And there's a kind of a Pulp Fiction aspect to the whole environment of LA, kind of contemporary LA. So yeah, we were kind of just playing with a lot of movies that we liked, and this, you know, Kyle came up with this great story that has a lot of fun reveals, I think.
You've worked with Kyle Jarrow before and have also collaborated with other people on the musicals you've created. How is your collaboration with him? How does it work, and how is it different from when you work with, say, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa on American Psycho, or any other example you want to choose?
Kyle is you know, so collaborative and so kind of open to any idea, and just, you know, it's all, everything is up for grabs, and it's a very you know, there's not a ton of strife or butting heads. It's when I, and not to say that, you know, when I work with other writers, there is butting heads, but you know, other writers have a more maybe kind of you know, intense idea about what they're going to do. And like with Steven's also writing the lyrics, and I'm really just the composer. So it's a different kind of relationship where
Steven Sater,
yeah, is just, you know, he's writing the book and he's writing the lyrics and he's handling the words and I'm just handling music. Mm-hmm. So it's a different situation. With Kyle and I, Kyle's doing the book and I'm doing the music, but we both contribute to lyrics, and it's a very kind of nice, free-flowing back and forth with that. In fact, in Noir, Kyle wrote most of the lyrics. In Whisper House, I wrote most of the lyrics, but we just share, you know, we just kind of share the credit. And then, you know, with Roberto, it's different, where I'm the lyricist and I'm the composer and he's the book writer. So in a way, they're all quite different relationships in terms of how we work together. But they're great with my writers. It's the directors where I'm always like, ah.
This reading at Powerhouse is directed by Rachel Chavkin. How does she come to the project? Have you worked with her before?
Well, we did a short kind of workshop at Playwrights Horizons a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rachel, obviously she did the Great Comet of 1812, and she did this show called Preludes at Lincoln Center that has been really acclaimed. And she's, you know, she's a hot director. Mm-hmm. We were lucky to get her, and, you know, so far so good. Like, I'm really enjoying working with her. She's very smart. She, you know, she has got great ideas, both dramaturgically and otherwise. So, you know, this is our first time kind of putting it in front of a real, you know, paying audience, so to speak. So, you know, we'll see how the relationship develops. But I think she's really cool.
New York Stage and Film and Vassar College has brought you in, or you have brought shows to the Powerhouse season a number of times. How does the atmosphere and the support you get at Powerhouse help along your creative process and the show?
Well, you know, I mean, Joanna Felser is just the best, and she's just tirelessly supportive, but not heavy-handed and not over the top, just offering sage advice when it's needed and, you know, not imposing too much on us as artists, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you know, providing us this great opportunity to just camp out at Vassar, have a lot of fun in rehearsals, and then have a lot of fun afterwards at the Beech Tree or wherever we go. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's very bucolic. It's, you know, really, I'm sure everybody says this, but it's like, you know, going to summer camp, and, you know, I'm 45 years old, but I feel like I'm kind of 13 years old, and I just, like, you're sort of free to do this really cool stuff, and hopefully it works, and hopefully audiences like it. But no matter what, you have a really lovely time here.
Do you get rewarding feedback from the audience?
Well, always. I mean, you know, I guess the idea here is that you're not supposed to be reviewed, and people aren't supposed to, you know, tweet or blog about it or whatever. So you don't hear stuff on social media necessarily, but you know when the audience is kind of getting it and enjoying it, and you know when it's not working. It's very palpable in the room when the show is happening. So, you know, it's a great thing to just sit there and watch the show with, you know, 200 or 300 people, and just feel the energy of the room.
Speaking of social media, you're fairly active on Twitter, not overactive, but you're on there. What do you think, if anything, that Twitter, that social media has contributed to getting the word out? Does it help you tell people about your shows and maybe even your goals for your shows?
You know, I have to say, I haven't found Twitter to be a hugely effective way of promoting any of the projects that I'm doing or shows I'm doing. I mean, you might get, you know, my paltry 9,000 followers, you know, you might get a few people who hear about stuff that wouldn't otherwise have. But I think what Twitter does do in a great way is it sort of allows you to, or at least in my case, I think it allows me to just be like a class clown. Mm-hmm. And I have a Twitter manifesto, which is that like 70% of what I say on Twitter is completely ridiculous and absurd and pointless. And 30% of it is earnest and sincere. And it's not my job to tell you which is which. So, you know, that's how I don't take Twitter terribly seriously. Mm-mm. And whenever I've said anything that has been semi-serious or political, it's been like a disaster.
Sure.
So I just, you know, whatever. I just try to have fun with it as much as I can. And hopefully people take it in the right spirit.
Your Tony Award-winning show is receiving a revival produced by the Deaf West Theater. What do you know about that? What can you tell us about that? What are you learning as that goes up?
Oh, no. I mean, I know a lot about it now. I saw it, you know, in downtown L.A. I guess it was maybe a year ago. And then they moved it to the Annenberg in Beverly Hills. You know, they kind of moved uptown. And I should say Michael Arden directed this production,
right,
of the Deaf West Theater's version of Spring Awakening. And he got together this incredible cast, a really incredible band, of very young musicians who are so talented and play the show better than, you know, almost any of the bands I've ever heard. And I mean, the irony is that, you know, this is the Deaf West production, but it's like the best sounding production we've had in a very, very long time.
That's funny.
And, you know, it caught on, and there were some lovely producers, Ken Davenport, who wanted to bring it to Broadway. There was a short window where we could go into a theater for 16 or 18 weeks. And so they took the opportunity, and now it's happening on Broadway. And we've been, there's been a little bit of recasting going on, but it's mostly the same company. And I'm thrilled. I mean, it's just this huge gift that was totally a surprise, and it all happened very fast. But I couldn't be happier. Marlee Matlin is going to be in the show. I think this is her Broadway debut. Mm-hmm. So it's just been this amazing thing. And then, of course, this whole experience of learning about, the Deaf West theater itself and their history and how to do deaf theater and the concerns of that and how to make that work. It's been, of course, an education. And in fact, there's something really special. I'm sorry, I'm going to get a little overly sincere here, but there's something really powerful about this particular set of actors doing this show, because the show is really about the inability to communicate about, really important, possibly private and, difficult issues, the inability to communicate about that stuff. And deaf people have that experience kind of from the, from moment one, and they feel it so intensely. And so to have those actors on stage telling the story, it's just, it's like, 14 times as intense and powerful. And I didn't expect that. And it was just really a wonderful surprise.
That will be at the Brooks Atkinson Theater on Broadway beginning in September. Also coming to Broadway early next year, your American Psycho. How are we feeling about that?
I was making fun about my relationships with directors before, but Rupert Gould, my director of American Psycho, is such a cool guy and he is able to put on such an amazing show. And he got together this really cool design team of Ez Devlin and our choreographer Lynn Page and our videographer Finn. It's just like a really amazing, cool group of English people. And I'm such an Anglophile. I'm just like really psyched to hang out with them and work with them. But we have an all-American cast, which, as we should, because it is American Psycho.
Right.
Ben Walker has joined on, and there's a couple, actually a couple Sprig Awakening alumni who may be in the production, Jen Damiano among them. So it's, I can't wait to jump in and like get it together. But it's a daunting show, and it's a daunting thing to pull off because it's electronic music essentially, and I there have been a lot of plays that have used electronic music as underscore, but there hasn't really been a musical that's like EDM, and so that there are a lot of challenges to kind of marrying the aesthetics of electronic dance music and musical theater. And we're getting there, but it's going to be a challenge to kind of really get it right come February and March.
American Psycho scheduled to begin previews in February. Noir is running in the Martell Theater at Vassar College July 31st through August 2nd. That's this weekend. Duncan, always a pleasure. I hope we'll have you back on soon, and have a great time at Vassar.
Thanks so much for having me.
Duncan Cheek and Kyle Jarrow's new musical, Noir, is directed by Rachel Chavkin and runs in the Martell Theater tonight through Sunday as part of New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's Powerhouse season. To learn more, visit powerhouse.vassar.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.